All right, you're very welcome back to the programme. Good morning if you've just joined us. How are you all keeping out there this Wednesday morning? Some of your texts and calls coming in. Hi, Greg. My daughter was very ill with RSV when she was 6 weeks old back in 2014. She was in hospital for 10 days and developed pneumonia. It was a very worrisome time for us, but the one-on-one care she received in Letterkenny University Hospital was second to none. And luckily, we now have a very happy and healthy nine-year-old. I love it. Thank you for that. I know it must have been the most anxious and worrying time for you, but it's lovely that you can now look at her happy and healthy at nine. Greg, as an adult, I'm in my fourth week of having a bad chesty cough, some wheezing also for a few weeks, though this has eased a bit. The GP prescribed steroids and antibiotics 2 weeks ago for 5 days. No real improvement. Getting very little phlegm up every day, exhausted coughing. Now I've got a slight rash in both arms. Has the doctor any suggestions or advice on how much longer this will go on? Should I just take the usual things like drink fluids and ibuprofen if needed? Obviously, I can't give you any advice, and my apologies, this came in after we finished our chat with our doctor. But I mean, I would go back to the GP, to be honest with you, because it sounds to me like you feel that you should be getting better. And now the appearance of this rash, put your mind at ease and ring the GP and go back if you can. I know for some, in some areas, it might be a struggle to get a spot, but there's no point sitting at home worrying. You're 4 weeks into it now. But as you heard from the GP there, the antibiotics may never work because it might not be viral. I was in the ED recently. A&E is all run up. Ambulance people have to stand with patients. I counted 11 ambulances standing in the corridor, ambulance people standing in the corridor with patients. A lot of older patients are in from nursing homes that are very dehydrated. They have vomiting and diarrhea. People getting x-rays were told to go to Scally's tomorrow. The nurses are run off their feet. The public could be doing more. People were trying to get through to GPs and the GP sent them up to the ED as they couldn't see them. There were over 200 people, they say, in the ED yesterday, which is a huge turnout. And we've had quite an interesting conversation and got a quite an interesting insight into why a GP might send someone to the ED. And then we heard from the health minister on this programme that says something's up because half of the people who are admitted to hospital are discharged the next day. So wherever needs to be changed or whatever needs to be done, you know, there are people in positions of power and authority that perhaps need something to do, I want to say happy birthday, or happy Christmas, sorry. Roisin McCartney's in Maville. Happy Christmas from her daughter Eileen and Boyd. Happy Christmas, Roisin. Feel free to send in your happy Christmas dedications, your happy birthdays. We love them on this show too, you know. We have a reputation for only discussing serious things all the while, but regular listeners know we touch on the lighter side of life as well, and welcome your good wishes for other listeners on 086 60 25,000 or by calling 07491 25,000. Okay, we are joined on the programme now by Declan Meehan, manager of the Milford and District Resource Centre. Declan, good morning to you. Thanks for coming back on the show.
No problem. Good morning, Greg.
Right. Speaking ahead of an open evening event for new communities in the area, and we will talk about that extensively, of course, but I suppose it's kind of a wee bit of a juxtaposition, is it, with the message coming from government as it relates to new communities, new arrivals here, and events like this. Now, of course, I don't want to in any way dilute the importance of that. But have you been getting any sense from communities, or have you been interacting with anyone in the wake of, or even your own views of, the government's decision to greatly reduce the welfare payments to particularly Ukrainian refugees, and also to limit accommodation, state-provided accommodation, to 90 days?
Yeah, I guess, look, it's a very difficult position that the state is in at the minute. It's a position of their own making. The lack of temporary and also medium-term accommodation that has been made available in the state just has not kept up with demand. Now, obviously, it has been unprecedented demand over the past 18 months. But I guess the message that has been sent out by government is, we don't want any more people coming here, and they're trying to make it as difficult for people as possible, or as unattractive as possible, particularly for Ukrainians to come, so that they can prioritise accommodation for international protection and asylum seekers. So it's I suppose, kind of a bit of a mixed message that's been sent out by government, but very clear in another way, where it's simply being, these policies are being signed off as an active deterrent for more for any additional Ukrainians coming to the country.
It's interesting, though, because it's really unproven because, you know, we've had direct provision for an awful long time. We know that the payment for international protection candidates is in and around the 38 euro, and yet there is a steady stream of those individuals seeking international protection coming into Ireland. So do we know that Ukrainian refugees fleeing a war will be deterred by that? Do you know what I mean? Because evidence would suggest that people still are prepared to come here, even if the pay is less, because there's job opportunities if you can eventually get into the workforce and what have you.
Yeah, I suppose you've got qualitative kind of evidence as well, where there's the Ukrainian Action Ireland group, which is kind of an advocacy body on behalf of Ukrainian refugees, has consistently surveyed new arrivals and people who've been here for a long time about what attracts them to Ireland. And just safety is the number one reason for them coming, and not welfare rates. The second reason for it is, and sorry, linked to the safety, is how far away Ireland is from Russia. The second reason is that it's the only English-speaking country in the European Union. And so a lot of Ukrainians come here for that. So for the proportion of Ukrainians that do speak English, obviously an English-speaking country is going to be more attractive to them. So, I mean, the proof will be in the pudding, and it remains to be seen whether or not this policy is in fact going to have any effect in terms of stemming the numbers coming into the country.
I think it's a real gamble, because go ahead, Declan.
Or if it's a cynical, I suppose, approach by the government, and it's actually not for a Ukrainian audience at all, it's for an Irish audience, which would be my kind of take on it. But
well, they were given information at information at recent meetings about public opinion that it's well reported that they'd formulate it. So I don't think you're being cynical. I think it's really quite a fact. And, you know, they've created potentially a huge rush between now and whenever this comes into effect. And also, I think people will come here with the knowledge that, well, let's see what you do after 90 days. And I'm not saying they'll do that in any, you know, with, but I mean, like, are we going to have a situation, because the council has no responsibility to house refugees, whereby we're going to have these stories of, you know, primarily, from a Ukrainian perspective, mothers and their children being put out into the street, you know, with no agency responsible for housing them. I mean, you know, I think it's a real gamble by government that could come back to bite them.
Yeah, I think that you could see a huge increase in homelessness figures driven up by that, obviously. And the other thing, I suppose, is that, you know, people who are sleeping on the streets are much more vulnerable into human trafficking or into anything like that. They're just much more vulnerable and unsafe in general. It remains to be seen what the effects of it will be. But I think that it's telling that, you know, any asylum seeker or refugee advocacy groups are casting a very cold eye on this policy change. And look, we've seen how, as you said, Greg, how ineffective cutting people's money actually is. We've had direct provision for the past almost 30 years now, how disastrous a policy that is, and also a barrier to integration. What the vast majority of people want to see is not asylum seekers and refugees existing in silos or in separate communities. They want to see them integrated into their community, and these policies do nothing to encourage that. And furthermore, we're now, you know, 18 months plus down the line from the beginning of the Ukrainian war and the first arrivals, almost 2 years since the first arrivals of Ukrainian refugees. We still don't have a plan. We don't have a coordinated approach to this. You still have the Department of Children responsible for housing refugees across the country, with very little support from the Department of Housing. It just, the mind boggles.
And they're trapped in, and a lot of them are trapped in grouped accommodation and in hotels, even whilst working and what have you, because there's no alternative accommodation, or very little, and there's huge competition for it, and it's incredibly expensive. And this has been created. That's the scenario we find yourself in. So if I were in a hotel in Letterkenny and I was working locally, and I want to sort of start planning a future, it's impossible, because the only accommodation, some would say, well, they should be welcome or glad of the accommodation, but still, it's not like we're not giving people an option to move from that and become less dependent on the state, for an example. Right, okay, this is separate, but it's all interconnected, I suppose. What are the reasons behind this open event? It's taking place this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. in the Remelton Community Centre. Refreshments and music will be on offer. It's an open event for new communities in and around the area. Everybody is welcome. Why this? Why now?
I guess it was something that we had discussed, so myself and Roisin Matthias Laurenti from the Bridge Fire, and discussed that we wanted to do something to showcase the welcoming nature of Donegal people, because, and it was in direct response, really, the conversation to the Dublin riots and that sort of very visual, very violent, I suppose, kind of manifestation of the far right sort of rise and movement, or even just the influence of the far right on other people, disenfranchised people, whatever we want to interpret it. So we wanted to show that the local community is very welcoming, the vast majority of the local community, which we know they are, and also to provide newcomers to the area with an opportunity to meet one another and to meet locals. So it's just a very informal event. It's a very simple idea. It's just a gathering to kind of allow people to make connections in the community. But it also is an opportunity for local people to show and demonstrate their support for diversity in the community.
Yeah, because even if it is a minority that acted out like they did and expressed themselves like they do, and it is a minority, I'm not saying that there isn't a majority that have views, okay, but I think it's a minority that would express them in a way to make other people feel fearful, uncomfortable. You do hear from new members of new communities here that the level of fear they feel is probably greater than the threat to them, but not in any way diminishing that, okay? And it's all about how people feel and subjective, if you know what I mean. But the reality is I think for the most part, it is a safe and welcoming environment, and people don't really necessarily need to change how they you know, go about their daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, that's easier said than done when there's a perception there of danger, or, you know, even that they're unwelcome or anything like that. So that, again, this event is trying to combat that in a very positive way. I think the other thing that we need to be mindful of is that the riots and that demonstration that took place very violently in Dublin a few weeks ago is, yes, it's 3.5-4 hours down the road, but there have been manifestations of similar far-right kind of tendencies in Donegal on our own doorstep. So it's about combating that as well. It's about showing elements of the far right that are very present in our county here in a very, very small numbers, but often vocal or visible, that's not acceptable. Mm. And this is a welcoming place. And I think that people have very valid concerns around lots of issues around immigration, refugees coming to the area. But I don't think that they're linked in terms of being welcoming to people who are here. Mm. And I think that people can have concerns around housing and accommodation and all of that, but also understand that they're not linked necessarily to this issue.
And there are many people out there who maybe will self-identify as the far right that you talk of, that will argue they're not far right at all. They just have concerns about immigration, how people are put into areas, when they're put into areas, and what have you, the appropriateness of certain areas and what. But I take what you're saying, Declan, that's your view, but I also a conscious of others might say, absolutely. I'm not far right.
Understand that as well, but I guess when there are arson attacks on buildings that are proposed for refugee accommodation, that is far right.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue with that. And I just wonder sometimes if, you know, second generation people that moved here, or even those that have been working in the community for 10 or 15 years, might feel like going to something like this to remind themselves that they're welcome here, because I know people that never had any issues before over the last 2 years are being fingered as if, you know, and they probably made people better a couple of weeks earlier in the hospital. Okay, well, look, at it's open to everyone. It is for new communities in the area. Everyone welcome. Wednesday, December 13th at 6:30 p.m. of course, in the Remelton Community Centre. Refreshments and music. And when you say everyone's welcome, the local community, the new communities, and they're all one.
Absolutely.
The same, really.
The more the merrier, absolutely. So I think it's going to be a lovely evening. very positive evening, and everyone welcome for sure.
All right, Declan, listen, thanks for your time this morning. Take care. Declan Meehan there. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Okay, today, thanks to our friends at McGee's, we've got a 50 milliliter Chanel Coco Mademoiselle EDP spray for ladies. You have to come on air and unravel a piece of music and tell us what famous Christmas song it is. And if you're successful, you then go on to be in a draw for a 500 euro hamper. It's a cracker. So all you have to do, name, address, where you're from. We'll want you to come on air, so please be inclined to do so. Have a bit of crack with us, 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps or text. We're joined on the programme now by Sinn Féin Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. Good morning to you, Deputy. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
We're going to talk about the hospital, but I might just get your views as well on something we were just chatting to Declan Meehan about today, and it's on the front pages as well. Just your or your party's position on these new measures agreed by government to greatly reduce the welfare rates, the payments for people moving to Ireland from Ukraine, fleeing the war, or whatever country they moved to here from, but also a 90-day limit on state-provided accommodation. Is this along the lines of what your party might do, or you're opposed to it, or what's your view?
No, we accept in terms of the reduced social welfare payments that it is necessary. Essentially, what this is an accommodation crisis. The government had clearly been very enthusiastic in relation to Ukrainian refugees. We have now about 100,000 across the state, and there's an obvious accommodation crisis. I mean, we've talked about it, Greg, in terms of Donegal and the, you know, the lack of consultation. And this isn't just Ukrainian refugees. This is also asylum seekers and temporary emergency centres. The disrespect shown to local communities, the failure to engage with GPs, with schools, with community leaders. So we do have an accommodation crisis. We have a real problem. The other difficulty, so we accept that the social welfare rates will have to be reduced.
So you then accept that this is a deterrent for people coming here. It's to deter them to come here. Does that sit with you morally okay? Because it's the same drones and bombs and what have you, and the mines that are blowing up in Ukraine and killing people. That was, you know, right from the very beginning of this. You know, is it appropriate now to say, well, we've got 100,000 and now we have to do something because, you know, there's a housing crisis. The threat that someone in Ukraine today is facing, if people believe it to be a threat, is the exact same threat, you know, 1 month into this incursion. So morally, that sits okay with you?
Well, I don't think it was ever fair that a Ukrainian refugee would receive the same, as somebody in Donegal, 220 euro, while somebody who's an asylum seeker gets 38 euro a week. I mean, how can that be justified? That massive difference. It was, you know, always, it didn't sit easy.
It's not so great, though, if now we're using the direct provision system and the international protection system as the bar, though, is it? You know, like to bring people down to that bar. I mean, I'm sure I've had conversations with you over the last God knows how many years where you were looking for that bar to be elevated, and now we're talking about we'll bring others down to that level?
Well, I think I would say this, is that we have a profound challenge in the country. If you look at Donegal, we have over 7,000 Ukrainian refugees. We have 1,500 people in temporary emergency centres. We know the impact this has had on our tourism sector in the county. We have to be honest about this. We have a challenge. We have a profound housing crisis for our own people in Donegal. We have people in defective block homes who are, you know, struggling to rebuild their lives. I mean, we have a perfect storm in terms of housing. So this isn't about being cold or cruel. This is about being realistic about what we can do, with our own resources. If you compare the offering of Ireland in terms of Ukrainian refugees with all of our European states, Ireland per capita is way above the European average in terms of income supports, way above it. So, I mean,
we have to be careful with comparisons, because in other countries, like Spain's 100 quid a week, so we're going to be a third of that. Germany's around 100 quid a week, but you get childcare and other benefits to try and ease you back into work. You know, I think just to look at the headline figure of 220 and say that, you know, we're way and above everyone else. I don't think that's really an accurate analysis, because I just think truth matters, if you know what I mean. I'm not saying you're not speaking the truth, don't get me wrong, but I don't think we can just say, well, it's 220 here and 100 there and that's it.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm most concerned about is the 90 days, because, you know, we were always told that the Ukrainian refugees coming in wouldn't compete with local people for housing resources. Now that is going to be the case. So that's the thing I'm actually most concerned about, Greg and Donegal.
What
and, you
would
know,
you
every
have
day
done in that situation, Porg?
Go ahead, Greg.
So what would you have done? What would your measure have been there then? If you're opposed to the 90 days, what would the alternative be?
Well, I mean, the difficulty, and I go back to the start 2 years ago, Greg, I mean, you remember this, the government were very enthusiastic, and I said this before, were almost boasting about what we were doing. They talked about 200,000 people. There was no plan. They talked about modular housing. There was no plan. So, I mean, this is a huge challenge, and you have to work with local communities. But, I mean, I think the level of refugees that we've taken, we can't sustain. Mm-hmm. That's just, we've got to be honest about that. We can't sustain it. We can't.
So
I mean,
what would
we're talking
you have
here
about the 90 days? What would the alternative year? And I can see the problems with it, and I can see the problems in trying to enforce it for that matter, but what's the alternative?
Well, I think that the difficulty up until now is that there's been, unfortunately, a huge incentive to locate here over European countries. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that number would significantly reduce now due to this belated government intervention. And in my opinion, it probably should have happened quite a while ago. And it's been obvious now, you know, when we look at the situations we've had in Buncrana, we've had in West Donegal. I mean, we have a situation in South Donegal where our tourism sector is in serious trouble. You know, we know this. We have hotels that had been struggling that are now housing refugees. That has a huge impact on the wider economy. I mean, we have to have an honest conversation about what we can and can't do here. And I mean, I feel that, you know, that we have got that balance wrong. We do have international obligations. We do have obligations of members of the European Union, but we also have a profound housing crisis that our own people are facing. We have a defective block crisis in Donegal that our own people have, and you think there was no crisis the way the government have behaved. So I think this is, unfortunately, a necessary intervention from government.
Yeah, okay. Right, we invited you on to talk about your comments as it relates to ambulances backed up at Letterkenny University Hospital and the stress on the ED, which is really what we see, the sort of the visual of what's going on across the services, more widely speaking, I think. The Minister for Health seems to have the opinion that at least some of the blame, if not all, depending on how you read his comments, is down to hospitals not discharging people at the weekends. Do you buy that?
No, a load of nonsense, Greg. You know, I mean, you have seen GPs who've united together across Donegal. You have seen consultants at the hospital. There's now almost 30 that signed the most recent letter. And I've seen all that correspondence. You've seen it to the minister. They've outlined clearly that there has been systematic underfunding of Letterkenny Hospital over many years. When you compare Letterkenny, the number of inpatients, which is about 27,000 a year, to what the budget is, I mean, it is clear that we're underfunded. What does that mean? That means we don't have the nurses, the doctors, the beds that is required. That's the reality. Stephen Donnelly heard that, so he finally was forced to come to Donegal. That was welcome. I've talked to the doctors and the consultants who met him, and they you know, I've seen what they've said to him. And particularly the emergency department's a big focus, you know, medical assessment units, additional capacity, separation of children, people with mental health. I mean, you know, last night I was talking to people, you know, who talked to me about, there was one man who was 79 sitting on a hard chair all day long. From, it must have been by the time I got the message, which was very, very late last night, it must have been that poor man was, I would say, 13, 14 hours. You know, this is not a developing world country, Greg, you know. Eight ambulances queued up outside. You know, it was even worse, apparently, a week ago. You know, this is not acceptable.
So you're gonna raise this with the Taoiseach today. You're going to call for urgent intervention from government. And you've already seen what he'll say to you, because that information unless he answers you off the top of his head, that information will be coming from the Department of Health. So they'll talk about the meetings, they'll talk about what they're going to do. But it really comes down to Letterkenny University Hospital being treated differently, more money, more resources. You know, it's kind of interesting, I think, and it was very welcome to see the HSE seemingly putting together incentive packages to try and attract occupation therapists and what have you to Donegal. I mean, if that model can be used in that area, and we'll have to wait to see how successful it is, we've been screaming for something like that for ages for the likes of the hospital. A bit of positive discrimination, you know, incentivized packages for people to move up here. Like, when I was speaking to Joe Corkery there at the start of the week and she mentioned that, I was like, right, okay, that is great. But if it can be done in one part of the health system, why not another? Anyway, sorry, that's me off on a tangent there. But I mean, like, that's the kind of solutions we're talking about here. More money and more attractive propositions for people to come and work here.
Yeah, you're actually spot on, Greg. And again, you know, you have the parents of children with disabilities who have formed a team, have done absolutely fantastic work. You know, as you know, we've had a number of meetings now with HSE management. That point you've made about incentive packages, why can't we do that for doctors that we're struggling to attract to Letterkenny? I mean, I was speaking to a senior person in the hospital recently, and they asked that very question. You know, we need to attract surgeons, you know, top quality people here, consultants. And if we don't have incentive packages, you know, if we don't have, for example, a surgical hub, you know, where you're guaranteed to be able to work through your procedures, that there isn't huge waiting lists here in Letterkenny. There was a compromise, as you know, in recent times, suggesting Donegal Town, which is halfway between Sligo and Letterkenny. Now what's been asked for is operating theatres in Sligo and Letterkenny, which I think is fair enough. So, I mean, the Stephen Donnelly can have no doubt now. That's why we were so determined to get him up here, to meet with the GPs as one group, to meet with the consultants. I mean, I've been engaging with this consultant team who are speaking out, and they know what they're talking about. They understand the big picture in Ireland. They know how we've been neglected. They have access. I've submitted parliamentary questions on the back of issues that they've raised, and I've got the facts. And I want to say to the listeners today, to be very clear, Letterkenny University Hospital is being discriminated against for years and years in terms of budget. We do not get our fair share of allocation. That's why we have a crisis in terms of beds, doctors,
nurses.
Do you know
what's worrying about that is what you said there. Off the record, I've heard that from government ministers. A government minister, sorry, off the record. Exactly what you've just said, just in case people think that's an opposition point of view. Now, clearly it was off the record because you have to stick to a party line. But I, with my own ears, and I hope people can trust me to understand when I say that I say that with absolute honesty and earnesty. Very finally, though, Minister Donnelly, and we have to be fair on this, he had concerns that consultants are doing too much private work and not enough public work down there. He has concerns that over, I think, around about half of the people that are admitted today will be discharged tomorrow, and that maybe GPs are too quick to send people to the ED. Now, he didn't come down hard on them, right? But he was meeting with them and he said, look, I've got some concerns in that regard. Do you share those concerns? Because we have to say, look, it can't all be the HSE's and government's fault, that we do also have to make sure and keep an eye on that those within the hospital, the fantastic work that they do, that everyone's playing their part, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it is a whole of health service solution. I mean, the problems, and like I have revealed in recent years that we're spending money rightly upgrading community hospitals, but there's no extra beds. So you take, you know, Buncrana, Carndonagh, for example, which is going to be upgraded, no extra beds. You go throughout Donegal, we've actually lost beds and nurses in community hospitals. Why is that important? Because if you cannot release people into these community hospitals from Letterkenny Hospital, to recover, then that adds to the crisis. If you don't have enough GPs and support for GPs across Donegal, if you don't have enough radiology services, if you don't have enough primary care services, so yes, all of that matters, and all of those problems present as a bottleneck at the hospital. But the core issue is, and there's no doubt about this as a fact, that if you take their community hospitals, Letterkenny Hospital, we have been discriminated against, we've been let down, and we have problems in Donegal that you do not have in other counties. Yes, it's true, Limerick can be compared with us, Drogheda, I would say, could be compared with us, but in the main, the problems that we face in Donegal are unique and they reflect discrimination, and that can't be argued with. So Stephen Donnelly has to stop, to be honest with you, trying to, I don't know, waffle, you know, about, you know, systems and all of this sort of stuff. I mean, he knows what needs to be done. He can't deny the facts as the consultants and GPs have presented, and he needs to act on it. And, you know, if he doesn't act on it, I mean, this winter is just going to be horrible, you know, with the hospital. You can see it. The ambulances will be backed up. That's going to put people's lives at risk across the county. Nobody in the health service wants this, but government need to resource it. There's no getting around it.
All right, we'll watch on with interest to your exchanges with the Taoiseach. Thank you very much for your time today. That's Deputy Padraig McLaughlin there. Margaret on Facebook says, fair play to that man, well spoken, a true Donegal man. You're a bit of a turncoat today, Greg. Well, Margaret, I have to ask questions. You know, I'm not here to be a publicist for the opposition as well. And if you look at the questions I would have put to Declan and look at the questions I would have put to Porrig, they're coming from two different viewpoints. But the only way to tease out policy, to tease out issues and to tease out opinions is to question people on them and put opposing points of view to them. So, well, if you think I'm a turncoat, that's fine. But that's the job, you know. It's not. I'm not here as a PR for opposition either. It's to hold everyone to account and to get to the bottom of people's views and what have you. I mean, you might note that Deputy McLaughlin, for one reason or another, didn't respond as to what's the alternative to the 90-day limit on housing. Sometimes the non-answer to a question is kind of an answer as well. Some of your comments here. We need to stop walking around on eggshells, re this refugee situation. Afraid to speak, government has made a decision, albeit too late, and have now caused another problem, that listener believes. Good morning, Greg. It's time to close the border and deport all illegals, then see what we're dealing with. We need a government that put the people of Ireland first, not the European puppets. We don't have any legal obligation to take them in. We found that out last week in the Dáil. Padraig McLaughlin didn't answer the question on his opinion of the 90 days for immigrants. Why did he not answer? Another 90 days is very generous, especially when they can finance and find their way home for Christmas. It's time Ireland took a stand, and let's not be fooled. The only reason it is now being taken is because there's an election looming and they know the silent majority are not in favour of accepting more refugees. So who are you going to vote for? I wonder. But I suppose the law's changed, so maybe the mood has changed. Good morning, Greg. Mr. Meehan has no problem calling people who have concerns far right. It's about time these people are called far left when they are on your show, just to give them a taste of what they see, how they like. As I said to you before, it's labelling people far left, far right. Far left is not really a slur as such, but far right is seen by some as. Tell Mr. Meehan the riots created change. It's an insult to call anyone who doesn't agree with the government the far right. Type of language, it creates division. The conversation about reducing, the one thing I will say is, I'm not saying it didn't create change, but the conversation about payments and time limits on accommodation predates the riots. There's no war in Ukraine. When they're able to travel to Ukraine and back to Ireland again, people need to wake up. I don't think people are, but I think people are generally aware that there are some people going home for Christmas. I don't think it's a secret. Right, Julie Patton joins us on the programme now. Julie, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm okay, Julie. Now, you lost your son, Shane, just 18 years of age. He was killed by a drunk driver in Donegal back in July of 2012. And, you know, we welcome you onto the programme to speak, to honour Shane's memory as well, but to speak at this time of year particularly, when people may make poor decisions. And we want to avoid more families going through this devastation. And I'm sure it feels for you, Julie, like yesterday or this morning that this happened to you and your family.
Yeah, you just remember every day you get up, you just remember how raw it is. And you have to keep going. And you just hope that highlighting road safety and Annan Cara will help people become aware of the devastation that can be caused and the devastation of losing a child.
Yeah, it's a two-part conversation, isn't it? We don't want any other family to have to go through that, but we also want any families that have, and particularly at this time of year, that they get support, supports that are there.
Yeah, there's Annan Cara was set up in 2008. That's a support group for parents It's a support group for bereaved parents. There's 14 face-to-face meetings every month throughout Ireland. Our own, like it's held here in the Radisson Hotel in Ayrkenny on the second Thursday of every month. I would be a parent that goes to the meetings, but I would also be a parent facilitator at the Annan Cara meeting. And it's just a support group to help people that's in the same situation as yourself, that may have lost a child through different reasons. Mm-hmm. Could be through sickness, could be through a road traffic accident, could be through suicide. Like, there's loads of different scenarios, but like, it's so as we all can get together and know that everybody's in the same situation.
Yeah, and we all deal with loss and grief in different ways, and for some it may not be their time to be around others or to attend meetings or to have discussions, but there's a lot of people out there that would really benefit, I think, from speaking to people that really get the loss and pain that they're living with.
Yeah, I personally didn't start going to meetings until about 3.5-4 years after Shane died. But I do find them now that they are helpful. And for me, they're helpful now. Not everybody goes that has lost a child. Some people go early on and it helps them. Some people go later. So, like, there's no time limit or the right time to go. It's when you feel that it's time to suit you. Now, you can go to these meetings. You don't have to talk. You can just go and see if it helps you. And
No pressure to speak.
Pressure on any parent to speak at the meetings.
Just go and
but everything is confidential.
And see what's good for you and what works for you. That it's great, and I'll remind people of the meeting, of course, Julie, but just in the general wider population, it's important we keep an eye on each other and be a shoulder or an ear or whatever is required, because presumably, and it's pretty obvious, I suppose, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, and maybe even particularly Christmas, because time freezes for people as well. If someone loses a child at 9, they're 9 every Christmas. You know what I mean? And it can be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, like, that child never grows old, regardless of what age they are. That's the age that you remember them at. You see other milestones that maybe they should be turning 30 this year, but they never got to experience that. And you see all their friends celebrating, and it is difficult, but you're happy for other people. But the support is definitely needed as well at these times.
Yeah, and it's just really to give people an opportunity to talk if they want to talk, isn't it? It's just to say, are you okay? How are you feeling? But ask the question in earnest, so that if they want to say something, they feel they're in a space that they can.
Yeah. And everybody has got like time to speak, or if you don't want to speak there, like, there's support groups online as well with Dan and Cara. You have their website that you can go on there.
While you mentioned the website, I might actually mention that Annam Cara is asking everyone to light up their virtual Christmas tree with a very special light of love in memory of loved ones. And you can donate, and in doing so, you'll be helping Annam Cara's work with bereaved families. And it's not road traffic collisions or sudden death, or it's absolutely everyone. It's for everyone who's been predeceased by their child. And you can go onto the website annamcara.ie, annamcara.ie, and you can make a donation there and add to the light of love in memory of a loved one, and in the process support Annam Cara's work that they do. And just to remind people again, there's a meeting tomorrow. It might be the first time you ever attend, or maybe you just feel that you want to go back just given the time of the year. It's going to be in the Radisson Hotel in Letterkenny. It's at 7:15 p.m. and all bereaved parents from the area are welcome. Excuse me. And as we've mentioned, regardless of the age their child died or circumstances of death, there's no need to register. You just arrive on the evening at 7:15 p.m. And as you say, Julie, there's no pressure. You can just go and sit and listen, or you could go and sit and talk. It's a very welcome space, and it's what's works for, and it could be one partner and another partner are different people as well, Julie. It's for everybody.
Yeah, it's for, like, both partners can go, they can go single. Like, just when you come, like, there's always, like, the parents facilitators, there's usually two, maybe three of us. And then we have a woman as well who's kind of, she's just kind of overall, and she kind of just makes sure everything's okay. She's just a facilitator. She's not a parent facilitator, so she doesn't have briefs. But she's kind of, but everything is confidential whenever you come in. And we try to make everybody feel as welcome as possible.
All right, Julie, thank you for
and
that.
And give them this time and to talk.
Yep, 7:15 tomorrow. No need to register. It's at the Annam Cara meeting at the Radisson Hotel, Letterkenny, at 7:15. It's for all bereaved parents. They're all welcome. Okay, thank you, Julie, for your time today. I really do appreciate
it. Thank you, Greg.
Take care, Julie. Oh. That's Julie Patton there.